So the next item is serving the Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Seva. Lord Shiva describes the glories of serving the Vaishnavas. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnor aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. My dear Devi, although the Vedas mention worship of demigods, the worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost and is ultimately recommended. However, above the worship of Lord Vishnu is the rendering of service to Vaishnavas, who are related to Lord Vishnu. Padma Puran, quoted in Ru Bhagavatamrita. Then, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stresses the importance of association with devotees. The root cause of devotional service to Lord Krishna is association with advanced devotees. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, association with devotees is still most essential. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 22.83. The sages of Naimisharanya further point out, the value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter, and what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. Bhagavatam 1.18.13. Srila Prabhupada writes, Srila Jiva Goswami, in his thesis Bhakti Sandharva, has stated that uncontaminated devotional service is the objective of pure Vaishnavas, that one has to execute such service in the association of other devotees. By associating with devotees of Lord Krishna, one develops a sense of Krishna consciousness and thus becomes inclined towards the loving service of the Lord. This is the process of approaching the Supreme Lord by gradual appreciation in devotional service. If one desires unalloyed devotional service, one must associate with devotees of Sri Krishna, for by such association only can a conditioned soul achieve a taste for transcendental love, and thus receive his eternal relation with Godhead in a specific manifestation and in terms of the specific transcendental mellows, rasa, that one has eternally inherent in him. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 1.35 purport. And Krishna Kshetra points out here, the Lord's temple is where the Vaishnavas congregate and worship the deity together. Just as you should serve the holy name and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, one should worship the deity in their association. For the Lord takes pleasure in seeing his devotees cooperate in his service. And that, so the whole, basically, if you analyze, the whole essence of devotional service is to serve the Lord in the association of devotees. Means the process is chanting, but this must be done in the association of devotees. We must always be in the association. Because the whole idea is we become perfect by that association, rendering service in the association. And once we become perfect, we continue to render service in the association of devotees. This is the most essential point. We do not see... Yeah. So... One should analyze this point very nicely and try to understand it. This has great meaning, these points of association with devotees, serving with devotees. Kanista has a tendency to feel that, well, just me and Krishna. You know, it's more close, it's more intimate, it's what we're looking for. But actually, what the point is that when one's in the spiritual realm, one finds that the association of devotees is most prominent. Krishna is being worshipped by so many devotees. This is one of the aspects when Godhead is manifested even more. It means we may work cooperatively, but it's still the Lord and myself. Like we're in the temple, maybe everyone's offering prayers and all that. So we're doing it together. We're being conscious of one another. So, but when there's active cooperation, that is what gives great pleasure to Krishna. When one actively cooperates with another devotee to bring out the pleasure of the Lord. So, in the beginning stages, then one associates with devotees, and in the advanced situation, one also will associate with devotees. There will not be a time when one will not be with devotees. So, one might feel that this will cut down. Yeah, somehow or another. Okay. Consequences of avoiding devotee association. The living entity is a social animal, and if he gives up the society of pure devotees, he must associate with non-devotees, asatsanga. By contacting non-devotees and engaging in non-devotional activities, a so-called mature devotee will fall victim to the mad elephant offense. Whatever growth has taken place is quickly uprooted by such an offense. One should therefore be very careful to defend the creeper by fencing it in. That is, by following the regulative principles and associating with pure devotees. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 19.157 purport. To properly worship the Lord in His deity form, one must cultivate regular association with devotees. Avoiding devotees shows a mentality of keeping oneself separate from the interest of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada describes this as follows. Quote, a separatist is one who sees his interest as separate from that of the Supreme Lord. Mixed devotees, or devotees in the modes of passion and ignorance, think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotee. The interest of such devotees is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their sense gratification. This is the separatist mentality. Bhagavatam 329.9 purport. In particular, devotees who worship a deity at home because they cannot visit a temple regularly must guard against such a mentality, which would not be pleasing to the Lord. Separatist, then, is seeing that his idea is separate from Krishna's. Krishna's is that he will interact with the devotee. There will be a loving relationship between him and the devotee. But separatist thinks that it is one way, that I'm doing the worship, but it's actually more like business. He's doing it, but he's expecting that I will get a return. Like I did something nice for somebody, therefore they should reciprocate with me. And if they don't reciprocate, then that's the end of the relationship. We see this very common. So one should avoid this mentality, because this is sparked by the modes of passion and ignorance. Ignorance, one thinks one's very proud. I mean, one is very proud, was very conscious of one's abilities, one is very proud of those abilities, thinks that he is very special because of his abilities, his education or his position or whatever he can do, and feels that he's a little better than others. Therefore, he can chalk out his own path, his own plan, his own everything, and doesn't have to really listen to others, follow authority, all these things. Or one in the mode of passion then worships the deity, but with the purpose of gaining material desire. One has some desire, one wants that fulfilled. So one has to avoid this and come to the platform where one serves the Lord for the Lord's satisfaction, to please the Lord. This is what the Lord wants. So that kind of service is very good. Otherwise, it's not very pleasing to the Lord. In his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22.75, Srila Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says, a Vaishnav is one who has developed all good transcendental qualities. All the good qualities of Krishna gradually develop in Krishna's devotees. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Prahlad Maharaj says, "And one who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna, all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consequently manifested, However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications because he is engaged by mental concoction in material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord." That's quoted from Madhya Lila 22.76. Lord Kapila describes his devotees as follows. "The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living creatures. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime." These are the same what Lord Chaitanya describes in the Shikshastika. Tolerant, merciful, friendly, no enemies, peaceful, abides by the scriptures. So, one is tolerant because one knows the material nature. One knows everything. Nothing works perfectly here. Materialist becomes very intolerant because he feels he can get material perfection here in the material world. Therefore, there's great intolerance of any discrepancy from that. One expects perfection, at least from others, and for one's own facilities. And if that is not there, one becomes very disturbed. So then, because of this, then, he cannot be peaceful. Because peaceful means we have no desire, no material desire. If you have no material desire, then one is peaceful. One is only in anxiety because there's some desire to be fulfilled. That creates the anxiety. That creates disturbance. Because we're trying to fulfill some desire, and it's not being fulfilled. Maybe gross, maybe subtle. But we're becoming disturbed because of this. Then, if one has no desires, then he can abide by the scriptures because he can accept authority. He can deal with others very, very properly. So he's able to befriend the devotees because he has no particular desires himself to fulfill. He's just the association of devotees. And he will have no enemies, because enemies means we feel someone has done something to us that we do not appreciate. Therefore, they are enemy. But if we have no desire, no one can do anything to us that is going to be a disturbance. Right? We will not see that it is there the cause. The modes of nature. The body is moving because of the modes of nature. Right? We may think, no, I'm in control of everything. We're not in control of our breathing. We're not in control of the heartbeat. We're not in control of how the nerves and all the other things in the body are functioning. The digestion's going on. Right? Anybody is? Anybody sitting there thinking, okay, breathe in. Breathe out. Okay, put a little more hydrochloric acid, a little bit more of this in the stomach, and okay, now it's time to move it. No. It's all going on by the modes of nature. Everything's going on. But what's happening is before us is being placed situations, and we're choosing. Oh, I'll take this one instead of that one. Right? You can't choose something else. Right? You have to choose an opportunity that the modes of nature have placed before you. Right? You have a situation. I'm going this way. Okay, I can either go down this street or that street. Or we think, no, I don't want to go this direction anymore. I'm free. I go the other direction. But you can only go back the way you came or some other. You can't walk through the building or fly in the air or dig under the ground. And you're not completely free. Even then, you just have the opportunities that are in front of you. Now, who placed those there? You placed them there? As you're walking down the road, all the buildings are manifesting, trees are popping up, birds are flying around, and everything's just happening just as you're walking down and you're making it manifest as you're walking. It's already there. You walk down the street, don't walk down the street, it's still there. Like that. So we're just being presented with what is already there, being arranged by the modes of nature. So the sadhu sees this, and therefore, he has no He's no desire. So if he sees something happens to him, it's being arranged by the same arrangement. Either indirectly or indirectly by the Lord. For the non-devotees, indirectly. For the devotees, then, by Krishna's arrangement, through the modes of nature. And only for, and for those great, great advanced devotees, then Krishna himself may personally make arrangement. Something's going on over there. Interesting. It's over there. I seem to be staring at something over there. Very intently. It's just samadhi. So therefore, one has no enemies. So one is friendly with everyone. And for those who are, one can help, then one is merciful. So this is there. He accepts authority, accepts the scriptures. So like this, all the characteristics come sublime. Because of this, wanting to, not having an interest separate from the Lord. One wants to please the Lord. Therefore, one follows the scriptures, one associates nicely with the devotees, one is friendly, one is merciful, one does not keep any enemies, right? Tolerant of all the situations. These all come like that. So therefore, one should avoid being a separatist. Because as soon as one has one's own agenda, then immediately we're not tolerant, because we're not getting what we want. Right? It's hard to be merciful because we're busy trying to get whatever we're getting for ourselves, unless being the Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of all living entities, is part of our agenda, that we want to be known for such a nice, you know, munificent person. So therefore we show some seeming, you know, mundane kindness like that. Friendly. We won't be friendly because we don't have much time. We're very busy getting our own desires like that. Or friendly means just friendly, but friends on our, we like the person, we're getting something from them, we're friendly. We're not. Like this. Then we have enemies because this one did this to me, that one did that to me. Like that. Or this one did this to my friend or my family. Like that. Then one cannot be peaceful. Because material desire is there. The endeavor, the hankering will be there. And the tendency will be that why I should follow the scriptures. Because the scriptures, we restrict things so much. It's naturally, it's not very practical. Right? I have my idea. I'm intelligent. I know what to do. And so, therefore, why I have to follow these scriptures. Right? Yeah, so the, how do they call it? So then the Madhya Lila, 2278, then a list of the 26 qualities of the devotee are listed, that the devotee develops naturally by worshipping the deity and developing all these brahminical qualities and by associating with devotees. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada writes, I'm very glad to learn the practical result of deity worship in your behavior. Deity worship is the practical demonstration, and hearing from the spiritual master is the nourishment of the idea. Krishna consciousness is so nice that anyone who has a little taste of it must feel a distinction between his past and present life. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 27th December, 1968. So we see worship of the deity is the practical demonstration of our devotional activities. It means we hear the philosophy, we know we're supposed to surrender to the Lord. So the deity worship is the practical demonstration of this. And this is then nourished by hearing from the spiritual master. The nourishment of the idea, the principles, the concepts of that. Okay. Then, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 13.139 describes the result of deity worship this way. A devotee constantly engaged in deity worship according to the rules and regulations laid down in the shastras and given by the spiritual master realizes gradually that he is in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he loses all interest in so-called meditation, yoga practice, and mental speculation. So the purpose of the deity worship is to be able to understand that the deity is not, is that the deity is Krishna. It means Krishna has come in this form. This is Krishna. But we are not able to see that. Right? So as we advance more and more, we're able to understand this more and more. So the purpose of deity worship is to come to the point where one directly is able to see Krishna face to face and worship him. That is the perfection. That is the actual purpose. Okay, is there any questions on this so far? Yes. With those who have, you know, who don't have an interest in devotional service or have not manifested, then we're still friendly, we're nice, but friendly means that we're pleasant, you know. I mean, what does it mean in the material world that you are friendly, right? One person is a friend with another because there's something that he likes, right? You're not friendly with someone that you don't have something in common with, right? So there's, you have an interest, someone else has the same interest, so then you nourish each other's interest. So it's not that it's actual friendship just because you have affection for that person. You only have affection for the person because there's something there that you want. You understand? So it's superficial anyway. Material friendship is superficial. So the point is that friendly means that we're always pleasant with everybody. We deal nicely with them and all that. You know, we speak properly and all these things. So that is what is meant. Anything else?
Like you said that when we have a desire, material desire, there's anxiety. Because there's so many things to be. When we have a desire, we have to fulfill that desire, so there's anxiety. But the same thing if we have a spiritual desire, that is with the desire with the Lord. But to fulfill that desire, there's a lot of anxiety.
But when we have a spiritual desire, it is in line with what the, you know, acharyas have given, then that anxiety is not a disturbance. Because that's an anxiety how to do something nice for the Lord. Right? You understand? It means you want to do something nice for somebody you may have affection for, so that that work is not a disturbance. Right? So if it's being done for the Lord, it's perfect. The point is that material endeavor is useless because it gives you a useless result. So all the trouble that you go through, you don't really get back what you think you're going to get back. You don't get back what you are, anything of any substance. Does that make some sense?
No, sometimes you feel like, you know, that's, the desire is not getting fulfilled. So you feel that the spiritual desire is, suppose you want to serve the spiritual master, and you're not able to.
Well, we also have to see. If we have a desire, you know, it's a spiritual desire, but we also have to see on what platform it is. See, it's just like you have what's in the beginning called Aropya Siddhi, or Aropya Bhakti. Aropya Bhakti means we have our desires, but we dovetail them in Krishna's service. Right? We want to eat. Right? And we like certain things to eat. So then we cook those things for Krishna. Right? But as we advance more, then we come to the platform of trying to understand, well, what does Krishna want to eat? You know, what will please Krishna? Like Mother Jashoda is not thinking, well, I'd like to eat this today, so let's then tell Rohini to cook it. She's thinking, well, what would Krishna like? We cooked this for him yesterday, and he likes these things. We haven't cooked that for some time. We should cook this, and all these kind of things. So it's purely, Krishna likes these things. We should cook like this for Krishna. You understand? So it's a different platform. So we may have a desire, but we also have to see, is that also desire? Means it's in relationship to Krishna. So naturally, it is good. But we also find that sometimes because it's in relationship to us, then sometimes there's still some disturbance. We want to cook a certain preparation because we want to eat that, but we want to offer it to the Lord. Right? So we have trouble getting those ingredients, or, you know, something goes wrong, it doesn't come out quite like what we wanted. So we're not in anxiety because we couldn't make that preparation for Krishna. Or it didn't come out tasting so good, so Krishna won't be so pleased with it. We couldn't cook the best. We're not pleased because we couldn't get that preparation. You know? You understand? So there'll still be a mix. It's being done for Krishna, but it still has some personal desire in it. You understand? There's still some mix of the motive passion. So it's basically being done for Krishna. In other words, yeah, the desire for some result is less. We're worshipping the Lord, but we're offering things we like, rather than what Krishna likes. You know? Or with that mood of, oh, this is a very nice preparation, I'd like to cook this for Krishna. You know? So like this, it gradually transforms. So if there's still a little bit of the motive passion, a little bit of the motive ignorance, even a little bit of the motive goodness, means mundane goodness, that is also is that we don't want any anxiety. Devotional service mixed with motive goodness means we don't want any anxiety. Not even for Krishna, we don't want anxiety. You know, we just want things to be peaceful and quiet and that's it, you know. You know, because it's mixed a little bit with the impersonal concept. So the impersonal concept means is that we just want peace. We've had enough trouble with the material world, now no material world, no form, no shape, no color, no taste, no smell, no touch, nothing. Nothing that'll disturb us. We want peace. Like that. So we have to also be careful of that. So pure devotional service means doing what needs to be done for Krishna. You know, according to our ability, according to our instructions, according to the shastras, in the association of devotees. Yes. Well, it says there is that you have the. It says here, we'll read this again. A separatist, one who sees his interest as separate from that of the Supreme Lord. Mixed devotees or devotees in the modes of passion and ignorance think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotees. The interest of such devotees is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their sense gratification. So you have to be careful that we're worshipping the deity at our house and we're, you know, we need money, we need facility, my kids are, you know, crazy, my, you know, wife's doing this, or this one's doing that, relatives this person's making trouble and bothering us, and so many different things, and we just, you know, we want the Lord to work all this out for us. So naturally we can go to the Lord, but the point is that we work that out and then everything's okay. But that's still quite mundane. It's a matter of, because if you work out those and there's no seeming material problems, that doesn't mean that there's no material problems. The problem is we're still in the material world, we're still dealing with the material energy. Right? So even a perfect household situation where everybody is all lovey-dovey and everything's wonderful and, you know, the sun comes up and the birds are chirping and the breeze is blowing and, you know, all the things like that, you know. They live happily ever after, all those things. Still, one is going to be not satisfied because there's no happiness in the material world. One may think, but there isn't. There's no such thing. It has never been, we have heard. No one has seen, right? The books always say, and they lived happily ever after. We discussed this in Hungary, like that. Huh? And they lived happily ever after. Now, if that was, it was so nice, everyone goes, oh, so nice. So if it was so nice, then why can't we do the next day? Because the next day is happily ever after means every day after that was wonderful and nice. So that means they wrote a book on so many days of these two persons. And they lived happily ever after. It means that we could write a book on the other days also. The next day or the day after that or a week after that or 1 year after. And it would all be nice and wonderful. But nobody can write such a book. Right? Because you just say it's boring. Right? Means it, all the only interest is in the whole passion, you know, of the two living entities getting together. But once they're together, no one wants to hear anything more. After that, it's just downright boring. Plus, they never live happily ever after. Where is the evidence? Who has ever done it? Right? You understand? So therefore, it's an illusion. You just say that, and they lived happily ever after. And everyone goes, ah, yes, such a nice stuff. Yes, we can live happily here and there. It's possible. See, here in the book it says, they lived happily ever after. It never happens. That gives us hope. Yes, so therefore I can push on one more day with my mundane life. Right? But it never happens. So the Bhagavatam doesn't say that. They lived happily ever after. They just say, as it is, this is what's going on. This is what you have to watch out for. So, and then some will say, well, that's not practical, that's not the reality. No, that is the stark reality. That's the actual reality. And if one thinks anything other than this, then there's illusion. One cannot see things as they are. Right? Like that. So just as one says, well, it paints everything as bad. But then in the same way as one is painting things that are bad as good also. It's also, one can say, oh, so much things are described. It says that there's so many difficulties. Why it always points out the difficulties? Why not the good? But if you actually study the good, also, that's also just as, it's an illusion. So you're painting the things that are supposedly good as good. But they're not good. So things that are seemingly bad, you know, are not bad. Means they're tolerated. Right? It'll say there are so many disturbances in the material world, so many people bothering this, that, so many things. But they'll say, well, it's not that bad. I'm not bothered by people all the time and, you know, like this. The kids aren't, you know, coming and acting. I don't perceive them like jackals. You know, they're always coming and asking for money and taking this and that and so many things. I don't mind it. I'm the father because I'm the Suridam Sarvabhutanam, right? So I'm God, so they come to me and I give them whatever they want and I feel very merciful and they're very happy. But the living entity would be tolerant. The realized person is tolerant of these things. So he's not disturbed by that. Same time, if there's something very nice and pleasant and happy, he's not disturbed by that either. So when you have this balance of happiness and distress, he's not disturbed by either. If things are distressful, it doesn't disturb him. If things are happy, he doesn't disturb him either. So materialist idea is if it's happy, it's good. And if it's not happy, it's bad. But for the devotee, if it's happy or not happy, it's not good unless it's in relationship with Krishna. Then if it's in relationship to Krishna, whether it's happy or not happy, it's good. So it's just a matter of where you draw the line. Materialist draws a line between material good and material bad. One is good, one is bad. But the devotee draws it between material and spiritual. So anything spiritual is good, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And anything material is bad, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. So it's just a matter of where you draw the line. That's all. So one has to be very, very careful that in doing this, one is asking for, but it has to be in relationship to Krishna. So many anxieties, so much of troubles are there. Why? Because so many attachments are there. Right? That's the point. So the whole point is we don't need to remove the trouble that's coming from the attachments. Because that will come and go as the seasons change. Sometimes it's happy, sometimes it's not. For the spiritualist, even a materially pleasant situation is not pleasant. If there's no Krishna involved there, it's not considered nice. You understand? So one may be asking Krishna to remove unpleasant material situations and create pleasant material situations. So that's what's being warned here in the deity worship, especially in the home worship, is that you will be asking the Lord to remove unpleasant material situations and replace them with pleasant material situations. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, to understand how to deal with these difficulties in relationship to Krishna, our service, other things are being disturbed because we are not seeing things in relationship to Krishna. It's because of our attachments. Right? Because we're attached, therefore, there is problem. So therefore, the problem is not the results of our attachment. The problem is the attachment itself. Right? You understand? If someone doesn't eat proper foodstuffs and he becomes sick, the problem is not the sickness. The problem is the irregular eating and eating of improper foodstuffs. So, what we're doing is asking the Lord to remove the sicknesses that come and make us healthy, but we continue to live an irregular lifestyle and eat all kinds of crazy things. So the point is remove our attachments. And if we remove the attachments, then we can function. But now, in the West, because we're so, or just not West, but especially the West, but in the material consideration, then one will think, well, why would I work for anything if I have no attachment? Right? Unless I'm attached, why am I going to work? Right? Because, why? Because attachment means I work because I'm going to get some result for myself. You understand? I'm attached to something because I get some result from it. I have a friend. I'm attached to them because when I'm with them, they tell all kinds of funny stories and make me laugh, and I like that. So I become attached to them. And if they go away or something like that, I feel bad because now I don't have someone I can go to who will make me laugh. It's not necessarily I have affection for that living entity. I have affection for their ability to make me laugh. Understand? So if there's no attachment, why I'll do? Right? The material concept is, if I don't have attachment to the thing, I'm not going to work for it. Right? So therefore, then, as soon as there's no attachment, then Westerners especially, but in India it's coming, but in the West, you see, then relationships are dropped because there's no attachment. Because that's the only reason that one does anything. But the Vedic concept, that's why it keeps, you see a theme throughout, along with all these certain themes are always there. Association with devotees, chanting, hearing the philosophy, acting according to scriptures, right? So what does acting according to scripture mean, right, in this context? It means being dutiful, doing something because it's duty. You're doing something because you're supposed to do it. Without attachment. That's the whole point. Arjuna is, I'm coming to this battlefield to fight. These guys have been giving us so much trouble for so long and all that. Now it's time to have a fight and, you know, clear it up, you know. Take this Duryodhana and all his nonsense brothers and, you know, remove the trouble, and then we can go on with life peacefully. Then when he goes out on the battlefield and sees not only Duryodhana, but, you know, everybody else he has, I mean, in other words, the whole family is out there. Then it's like, well, I don't want to fight because I don't want to kill all these people and lose everybody. I mean, it's the only reason I'm out here to fight is so I can enjoy myself with all these people. And now if I'm going to have to fight all these people and lose all them, who am I going to have to enjoy all? You know, I have the kingdom. Who will I enjoy it with? You understand? So therefore, he recommends just going to the forest, right? Leaving the battlefield, go to the forest. Why I should fight? Let them have it. Right? You understand? He couldn't get what he wants now? Okay, forget it. Let them have it. Sour grapes. You know? Or then he makes up all kinds of things. Oh, you know, mind is very clever. So, oh, then if we do this, then all kinds of moral problems will come up and the women will become polluted and then Varna Shankara and all this and that. So therefore we can't fight. He wasn't saying that 5 minutes before. It's like, you know, take my chariot into the middle so I can see who wants to fight, you know? Let us see who has come today. Let us see who the real warriors are. Like that. That is the mood before. Let me see who I'm going to fight with, you know? I want to know, right? Just like if it's supposed to be a big fight, you want to see who is there. You know, you want to be able to, it satisfies the ego to know, yes, we're fighting with someone of repute, right? You know, if you're going to have a big fight and who am I fighting with? And they bring out this, you know, 2-foot-tall midget who weighs about 3 kilos. And it's like, huh? I'm going to fight with this? You know? Nothing. You know? It's below me to fight. So I want to see who's there. Ah, this warrior. Oh, yes. This is worthwhile. So it's a whole Kshatriya mood. He wasn't thinking before that, you know. He wasn't telling. Otherwise, they could have arranged it before. You know, Duryodhana and that, it comes up to the point, we'll fight. But he wasn't saying, no, we can't fight because then all the women would be left unprotected. No, at that time, yes, we'll fight. But then it's only when he gets it out there, then he brings this up, you know, once he decides, well, I'm losing out here, right? I'm not going to get what I wanted. I wanted to defeat, it's like, they want to remove Duryodhana, right? You know, Duryodhana, maybe Shakuni, like that, and then leave everything as it is, and then go on and then be the emperors. They're not thinking that everybody in the family, on both sides, plus all the other allied kings and anyone who would be friends with, are all going to be wiped out, killed on the battlefield, and then I'm going to be left, you know, just sitting around just with, you know, him and his brothers, you know, and that's it. There's no one else left. So that's not the idea. You know, that's the mind. Mind thinks, oh, we'll get this, we'll be happy. Right? You understand? So, what was the point? So then Krishna, he says, not fight, not this, not that. Then Krishna describes to him so many different processes he can follow. But we see he always keeps coming back to one point, is just do your duty, but do it for him. Do it for Krishna. You know, you don't have to sit on, you know, go out in the forest and, you know, hold your nose, stand on your head and do all kinds of far out gymnastics or mental concoctions and this and that. Just do whatever you're already doing, but do it for Krishna. But the result should be for Krishna. You don't claim the result for yourself. Right? So therefore, we have a stage that is established here, which is doing duty for duty's sake. For the sake of pleasing Krishna. Right? Doing our duty for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Rather than I do my duty because I get some result and I want that result. You understand? You understand? Just like, so the householder, he's doing these activities because he's attached. He's attached to the wife, attached to the children, attached to the facilities, attached to, you know, whatever goes on in the house. And because of that, he'll go out and work very hard. So then, if we look at it and we go, well, you know, I shouldn't be attached to all this, then the next natural thing is just drop it like a hot potato. Right? But that doesn't give satisfaction either. Because the conditioned nature is there. The conditioned nature needs to work or be in a situation in which it can function nicely. So therefore, we do the duties, the household duties, because it is our duty to do them. It is our duty to take care of the family members. It is our duty to do so many different things and interact with them and be Krishna conscious in so many ways. It is our duty. So because of that, we're doing it, not because of attachment. So when the problems are there, then we're worshipping the deity. Then if we're asking the deity to remove the problem, that's not actually going to solve anything. No one has been satisfied by removing the material problem, because there's unlimited material problems. And as long as you're in the material world, there's always going to be problem. See, the foolishness is, I will remove the problems, I will be in the material world with no material problems and be happy. Right? That means the devotee wants to go to the heavenly planets. They don't want to go back to Godhead. Maybe eventually. But right now, today, I want to enjoy the facilities of the heavenly planets, not even there, here. Now. Right? And that's why I'm working. But no, we ask the Lord, the problems are there because of our attachment. Right? Because of our attachment, therefore, these are there. So we have to pray to remove these attachments. Remove these anarthas. But if we remove, but the problem is the devotee will think, well, if I remove the attachment for the wife, family, and all this, then I will leave. Then who's going to take care? No. Out of duty we take care. Right? And duty to please Krishna means we'll do a good job of it. Right? You think Bhaktivinoda Thakur was attached to his wife and family? His house and his job as a magistrate? He did it very nice. He wasn't foaming at the mouth. How much time needed to be done? He did that perfect. Didn't do anything beyond that. Right? He kept his time for his chanting, his reading, his sadhana, his writing. You understand? Think Prabhupada was attached to his wife, family, all these things? No. But it's his duty. As a grihastha, he takes care, he does all that. As long as he can do his duties nicely, and it is worth doing the duties, there is, in other words, the family is also becoming Krishna conscious, it's there. As soon as it's not, time to go. You understand? So that's the whole point. Is we're attached to the family members and the not because of the material, because they're devotees. Right? We're attached to the wife not because she's very attractive looking, but we're attached because there's devotees, we're doing service together. We serve Krishna, we do so many things like that. So this is not material attachment. Attachment to devotees. Like that. Because otherwise, if it's for their beauty, then you have to please them in so many ways. You know, so many material things have to be done. But no, it's the duty to take care, do these different things. You understand? So it takes on a whole different, it goes from the level of sense gratification or a little bit of sentimentality of, you know, morality and being good. But comes to the platform of duty. And that duty is then being done for Krishna. Krishna is recommending Arjuna to be situated in the platform of dharma, but doing it for Krishna. Do your duty, but for Krishna. Yeah, it means sarva dharmam paricharya. You give up all this religion for religion's sake. See, now we're talking on a higher level. We're talking about people who actually dharma means something to them. Means following the tenets of the scriptures very nicely is normal for them. But now, don't do it because you're going to get some pious result from that. See if you can get attached to that platform also. I do it, I work nicely and all these things with the wife, family. It's pious. I will get result for that. I will get good credit for that. No, we're doing it, it's our duty for Krishna. So for those who are not used to the following the scriptures, then that's a big step for them. Do something out of duty instead of just gross mundane attachment, sensual attachment. Right? Then we come to the platform of we do the duties, but then for subtle attachments. You know, instead of prayas, it's shreyas. I'm attached to the family, I get my result now. No, I'm attached to the duties of taking care of the family because I'm attached to the result I'll get afterwards in the heavenly planets or other things like that. I've done my duties nicely as a grihasta, and then I will enjoy later. Right? So the one now is we're disregarding the scriptures. And the other is we're following the scriptures, but we're wanting the result later. But here it's a matter of giving up that and following the scriptures, abides by the scriptures, but not for our benefit, but to please Krishna. Because when Krishna comes, he also follows them. Krishna follows, you read Krishna's daily activities, you know, like in Dwarka, he gets up, he does all the activities, just like one should do. That makes some sense. Any other questions? Yes. Speak a little louder. Huh. Oh, so in relationship to, you know, cooking for what we like for Krishna, or cooking what Krishna likes, then if we have a specific diet or something like that, then the point is why should we follow a specific diet? What's the purpose? Yes, so we maintain our health so we can serve Krishna. So then, in this way then, it's being done for Krishna. Like that. We have to in some way connect it back, but in a realistic way. It means that after eating, that energy you get, you use it for Krishna. We may say, oh yes, must have this, that, and then we don't do much service for Krishna. We just eat, sleep, and do whatever we want. But we have to actually, that has to be tangible, practical service. Okay? Anything else? So then goes on to then, so this is all describing that how one should associate with devotees and one will gain these very nice qualities of the devotees. So then next point is being made is how to distinguish the various categories of devotees, because it says one must associate with advanced devotees. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, a Vaishnava is distinguished from a non-Vaishnava by his indifference to anything other than Lord Krishna and his service. The more a devotee develops this quality, the more advanced he is. In his Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita 3.2, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes devotees of varying grades. Broadly speaking, there are two categories of Vaishnavas, namely ordinary Vaishnavas and transcendentally situated Vaishnavas. The ordinary Vaishnavas are of three classes: those who believe in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness but do not practice strictly, those who accept the markings of a Vaishnava and respect the Vaishnavas but do not practice strictly themselves, and those who are from Vaishnava families and wear the marks of a Vaishnava but do not practice strictly. In India, one can readily see examples of these three classes of ordinary Vaishnavas. They can all be elevated by associating with real Vaishnavas. In other words, those who either believe in the tenets like that but don't really follow, you know, we see that all of them, they have in common this principle of not following very strictly themselves. So either they believe in it, don't follow, they accept the markings of a devotee but don't follow, or are born in the family of devotees and, you know, wear the markings as everybody else in the family does, but they don't follow very strictly. So these are called ordinary devotees. These are not of a greatly advanced. So this is not what we're looking for when we talk about we should associate with advanced devotees. So then, the other category of devotees that he mentions then is sampradayak Vaishnavas. Those who have surrendered to the sampradaya, surrendered the spiritual master, and has been accepted under the shelter of that spiritual master. And then with time one comes to the platform of initiation and then continues in this way. In other words, when one may have Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha, but the real serious, that's called ordinary devotee. But once they seriously start taking up the devotional practices, take up bhajana kriya, right? Then this is the sampradayak devotee. Bhajana kriya under the directions of a bona fide spiritual master. Right? They take up following the different items of devotional service as given by Srila Rupa Goswami under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada then describes all this very nicely in his books. And so that means if we take that up very seriously in the association of devotees, then with the purpose of advancing to the platform of pure love, then this is proper. So now within those who are properly situated, transcendentally situated devotees, then is there any questions on that point? We all understand this? I mean, you have the ordinary and the sampradayak. Ordinary means they accept and believe in Vaishnava tenets, but they don't follow very strictly. You know? Like that. They go along, they do something, but they themselves are not overly serious. So sampradayak means those who are seriously following the tenets under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. Does that clear the distinction? Right? So a child may be born in the family of devotees, wear tilak, do this and that, but not very serious about devotional service themselves. And they do, they don't mind, they like it, they believe in it. You know, if they were going to call themselves following any religious process, they'd say, yes, I'm a devotee. But they don't follow very strictly. So this is ordinary. So that association is not so special. So what the acharyas are recommending, what Srila Prabhupada is recommending here, is one associate with those devotees that are serious about practicing Krishna consciousness and becoming perfect. All right? Is that clear? No questions on that. Okay. Thinking we should end here. It's already 6:13. Because the next section will be the three categories of transcendentally situated devotees that you can tell by advancement by chanting, in chanting, advancement in faith, and advancement according to realization of Krishna. Then that is how one can, these are the symptoms by how you can tell those who are serious about Krishna consciousness. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.